All across Wisconsin from Civic Media, this is Up North News Radio. Now, live from our Lake Wissota studio, here's the founding editor of Up North News, Pat Kreitlow.
Where it is a sunny and mild day on Lake Wissota as we start this second hour of Up North News Radio for this Friday, April 14th. Coming up this hour, as usual, we'll talk to our friend Mark Jacob down in Chicago, author and media critic who looks at the way national media has covered the stories of the past week. And as always, there's something to be said about media coverage, especially as you have forces in our country that are being increasingly against democracy, to put it mildly. We'll talk to Dan Schumacher near the end of the show and kind of preview some weekend sports, all that and more, plus your phone calls if you like at 844-967-2789 and 715-388-7155, because 715 Day is something we want to make happen in July throughout more of the 715. We talk about it, of course, because today is 414 Day, April 14th, around the Milwaukee area. So we've been talking about that a little bit earlier on today. And if you want to get more of the news that we cover at Up North News, you can get our daily newsletter. Just go to upnorthnewswi.com. Don't forget the WI and click newsletter in the top banner. We're going to bring in State Representative Jody Emerson from Eau Claire here. And I'm looking at a story in the Eau Claire Leader Telegram and notes that we were aware of prior to the story being published that noted in 3 years before Glenn Perry killed Chautauqua police officer and a Cameron police officer last weekend, Perry made comments to his family that he would shoot and kill police officers and told them that he drove around with two guns in his car. His story is not unfamiliar, and it is, again, something that seems to be almost literally crying out for red flag laws in this country, certainly in the state, which are still lacking. So we want to bring in Representative Jody Emerson to talk more about that. Jody, good morning. How are you?
Good morning, Pat. I appreciate you having me, but I wish we were not here to talk about this topic today. So
yeah, you and me both, but here we are. Yeah. So you have seen, I have seen those criminal complaints from the past that talk about Glenn Perry. And we should add that the State Department of Justice is doing its investigation on the scene. We don't have specific information on it, but it is pretty clear, Jody, from Glenn Perry's past that this is an occasion where we say, could we in Wisconsin be doing more to get guns out of the hands of people who are proven, adjudicated to be a threat to themselves and others?
Yeah, I think that's what this whole conversation needs to be about. And I want to start by saying that my heart goes out to those who are affected by this tragedy last weekend. And really, those affected by this tragedy are law enforcement officers all over the state, people in the whole Barron County community, and obviously the friends and loved ones of the two officers who were killed. And I don't want anybody to say that I am trying to make political hay with this, because I would rather have anything happen than have to have this conversation with you. But I've worked really hard during my political career to put some protections in line to make sure that PTSD for our first responders is covered, to protect them from the harm that they may do to themselves because of the job. And nothing frustrates me more than to see protections that we might have been able to have in place if we could have had this conversation in Wisconsin that would have protected, could have protected, might have protected our officers from this situation, from outside themselves. And so that's why I'm coming to you today, is it's time Wisconsin has this conversation, and people need to be educated about what is called red flag laws. The word that's used in the statutory language that we've tried to get is extreme risk protection temporary restraining order. Temporary restraining orders are what we're talking about with this. So if somebody is concerned about you being a threat to yourself or others, and you have access to firearms, having an extreme risk protection temporary restraining order means there is a way to have those weapons removed from a house.
Not just a way, a process, a legal process. This is not somebody feels like coming to get your guns. This is not like, and I'll always come back to this because I think it was one of the most offensive things Tim Michaels said when he was running for governor, mm-hmm. that we don't need red flag laws because women will just make up stories about the husbands they're fighting with to get their hunting rifles taken away. It was a grotesque distortion of a legal process where a judge has to look at evidence and essentially say, yes, this person is a threat to themselves or others. This is a process that's in other states. And it, you know, unfortunately, the circumstances again show how it could be useful in Wisconsin and keep people safe.
Yeah. And looking at this criminal complaint from 2020, you know, it says if they, meaning the family of Mr. Perry, called the cops on him or put him in the hospital, he would kill them. This guy had already threatened and had a lot of, there's other language in here about police officers and what he wants to do to police officers. And I'm not going to read it out loud because I think those who are hurting and have a police officer in their life don't need to hear that directly, but it is well documented.
It is, but we know that it's there. And again, that is the crux of what would put a red flag protection order into place. We're going to take a break. We're going to continue this conversation with State Representative Jody Emerson about keeping people safe from others who insist on putting politics ahead of the lives of cops and kids and the rest of us. We'll be back here up north. We're going to talk more about gun violence and the very real, very supportive things that can be done to prevent it, and continue that conversation with State Representative Jody Emerson coming up in just a bit. First, Jennifer Wojcicki is here, meteorologist with Weatherology, to take us into a weekend across Wisconsin where we go into it having been downright summer-like. We're not going winter-like entirely, but we're getting into that messy middle for a little while. Jennifer, good morning.
Good morning. Michael Carey here filling in today for Jennifer.
Hey, Mike. How are you? What did you do with Jennifer?
She wanted to have this nice Friday off here.
I cannot blame her for one moment. All right. Well, yeah. Mike, tell us more about the weekend forecast here.
Yeah, well, after those numerous records across the state yesterday, we're going to be at or just shy of record high temperatures once again, pretty much for all of the state for today, looking at high temperatures pretty much statewide in the lower to middle range of the 80s with sunny to partly cloudy skies expected and a bit of a southerly breeze to around 10 to 20 miles per hour by this afternoon. So still some high fire danger concerns across the region with those warm and breezy conditions, especially later on today. As soon as tonight, we'll have some increase in cloud cover, though, as our next cold frontal boundary and the developing low pressure system begin to approach from the west. Still looking to stay dry though statewide for tonight, with those overnight low temperatures looking to drop back into the lower to middle range of the 50s. Then into the day on Saturday, the best chance for some showers and some thunder showers early in the day, especially across the western half of the state, areas like Amory over to near Eau Claire and La Crosse. But by the afternoon time frame, those scattered showers and storms looking to overspread much of the state into the afternoon time frame. Just a very marginal risk for some strong to severe storms, especially in areas to the southwest of Madison there by Saturday afternoon into the evening. I think hail and some gusty winds would be the primary threats there, again, just for far southern portions of the state. For Saturday, still quite warm temperature-wise, especially for the eastern two-thirds, still working up well into the upper 70s to maybe even close to that 80-degree mark in areas like Madison, even as far north as Oshkosh and up to near Green Bay. But further off to the west, starting to see some cooler temperatures infiltrating areas like Amory up to near Rice Lake, only expecting 50s and 60s for high temperatures over that way. Then for Saturday night, rain quite widespread across the state of Wisconsin, could still have some embedded thunderstorms as well. Overnight low temperatures for your Saturday night, tumbling all the way back into the upper 30s for the northwestern corner of the state, but still for areas like Madison, Milwaukee, as well as Oshkosh, sticking closer to the 50s for those overnight low temperatures. Temperatures continue to cool into the day on Sunday. In fact, the temperature is holding fairly steady in the upper 50-degree range for areas like Madison over to near Milwaukee, but upper 30s and lower 40s into areas like Amory as well as the Rice Lake. So we could even have some wet snowflakes mixing in there for northwestern Wisconsin during the day on Sunday. And then that rain-snow mixture line looks to progress eastward for pretty much all of the state into Sunday night. So wouldn't be surprised to see some minor snow accumulations, especially on the grassy areas there by the time you wake up Monday morning. And Monday looking quite chilly, not getting out of the 40s for high temperatures, even as far south as Madison and Milwaukee, maybe some lower 50s in areas closest to the Mississippi River there on Monday, but definitely a much cooler stretch of weather later on this weekend and into early next work week.
All right. And as always, weatherology updates throughout the day on all of our Civic Media radio stations. Michael, thanks so much. Have a great weekend. All right, there's Michael Kaver from Weatherology giving us our update there. And we'll continue our conversation now with State Representative Jody Emerson. Jody, I think I had you on mute. You look like you're unmuted. Are you back with us?
I think I'm back with you.
I think you are as well. All right. So I want to set things up again for folks that might have joined us a little late. There were two law enforcement officers, one from Chautauqua, one from Cameron, who were murdered last weekend during a traffic stop by a guy whose past was well known, his violent history, his rhetoric about killing police officers and such. And as such, and I'm going to play the bad guy here, because Representative Emerson is here in a very responsible manner to talk about things we can do to keep cops and kids safe. I don't want one person out there saying that, you know, we're politicizing this. If anybody's politicizing this, it's the people who are putting their politics ahead of the safety of cops, kids, and all the rest of us. That there are common sense things that can be done that have been proposed by Governor Tony Evers, who called a special session at one point to address the scourge of gun violence. And it was gaveled in and gaveled out. And instead, in Wisconsin over the past decade, much like more recently in places like Florida, gun laws have been made more lax. And as a result, we've had these mass shootings. We've had these terrible tragedies. So we are again going to come back to this to talk about things that can be done, that can be proposed, that can they will prevent other tragedies like these. Not all of them, but there will be some degree of prevention in there. And Representative Emerson, where I'll start with you is just stating the obvious. It's been polled several times. Red flag laws, like universal background checks, there's nothing partisan about it. These are measures that enjoy broad bipartisan support from the people of Wisconsin.
Yeah, when people understand what an extreme risk protection order means, they support it. A lot of people put up a blockade with this because it involves guns and they've read the partisan headlines for their side and no one's going to take this from me ever. Well, if you're a responsible gun owner, no one is going to take anything from you. The only time that a gun is removed is when you are a threat to yourselves or others. And when we talk about that aspect, nobody wants guns to be in the hands of somebody who is a threat to themselves or others. And it's time we start having this discussion. I look at the horrible tragedies that have happened in Tennessee. And the governor of Tennessee recently did some executive orders doing his part. And I would not call the governor of Tennessee a bleeding heart liberal by any stretch of the imagination, but no. He knew people who were killed.
Yeah. And again, it shouldn't have taken that. These things shouldn't be happening after one more incident, after one more protest march, after one more whatever. And all we're saying is we have to stop going backwards. And we went backwards in Wisconsin, first by allowing concealed carry with a permit, but then even proposing to roll back the training, our police officers, our law enforcement, our men and women in the military take training to learn the right ways to handle their weapon. It's part of that, you know, well-regulated militia. And yet what we have here, Jody, and I don't mean to box you in on something because this is a serious topic, but I said it earlier this week. I don't think there is a single dumber bill that was introduced in this legislature this year than the one this week that said, let's let teachers have loaded weapons in classrooms and other school employees. It is, no pun intended, it is a cop-out. It is lazy. I'm looking at the Facebook comments, people saying, you know, that, yeah, this is Governor Evers' fault because teachers aren't armed. And I'm not going to get, you know, mixed up in the comment section with folks like that. But I'm thankful for you and other grownups who are saying, why don't we take on some of the responsible measures that can save lives instead of turning our schools and our streets into the Wild West?
Yeah, and it's time that this is what I'm here about today, is it's time we have the discussion about who should have access to weapons, when should those weapons be removed, if at all, for how long. When I talked to the reporter yesterday from the Leader Telegram, he was asking me all kinds of details. And I said, you know, I can't come to you with that because we've never had the discussion in the state of Wisconsin. We put these bills out and the Republicans shove them in a drawer. And I think the state of Wisconsin, the people of the state of Wisconsin, the people who hearts are aching today because they've lost a loved one, either recently or a long time ago because of gun violence, deserve us to have this conversation about who should have access to weapons, for how long, when, things like that. And it's, I fought too hard to keep police and other first responders safe with other things. And it's time that we do this. And I'm just very, very frustrated. My heart hurts today for the communities of Cameron and Chautauqua and Barron County. And we just need to do something soon.
Right. And look, again, under the category, the least you can do is the Republicans in the legislature could address what the conservative majority on the state Supreme Court acknowledged was a nonsensical loophole, that because of how the state's disorderly conduct law was written, it is possible that some people with a conviction for domestic violence could still possess firearms. Certainly not the intent of anybody, but to even do that would lead to people rushing to TV cameras, rushing to microphones on right-wing talk radio to say the government is coming for your guns. It is irresponsible. It is reckless to the point of endangering others. And that these are things where I got to ask, Jody, you talk to rank and file members there, not as often probably as we all used to in happier times, but boy, I would sure like to think maybe you can count on one hand the number of Republicans who, if it were really put up for a vote, they would do things like close these loopholes, maybe support a red flag law. I don't know. I can't ask you to jump into their minds, but God, I hope you're having at least one or two encouraging conversations there sometimes.
We're trying to have conversations all the time about some of these debates that the public wants us to have. I'm not even going to say that we're going to come to a solution. There certainly are tough issues that we're debating that we can't come to solutions on. But to put some of these topics where we're just not even having the conversation, it's time that everybody that I work with step up so we can have this conversation, so we can figure out what is the sweet spot in Wisconsin. How can we work together to keep the guns out of the hands of people who shouldn't have them? And that doesn't matter if you're in a tiny village up north, if you're in a large city in the southeast corner of the state. Nobody wants to have guns in the hands of people who shouldn't have them. Yeah. And there was a tragedy in Barron County because we couldn't do that. This guy had guns and shouldn't have.
Much like earlier, when there was a tragedy in Kenosha, when Kyle Rittenhouse shot and killed two protesters in Kenosha in 2020, and he was initially going to be charged with possessing a firearm as a minor, which is a misdemeanor, but his lawyers were able to point out again that the way things were written, even minors can carry loaded rifles in public in Wisconsin right now. There's just no shortage of some basic things that you could almost call housekeeping that would keep people safe in Wisconsin if more colleagues of yours in the legislature would simply do their job of putting people ahead of politics. Jody, it's always great to talk to you. I'm sorry that it's under such serious circumstances this time, but you know, thanks again for bringing the issue to our attention, and have a great weekend. We'll be talking again very soon.
Nice to talk to you as well, Pat. Take care.
All right. Take care. When we come back, Mark Jacob joins us. He will talk about some of the media coverage of this week's big stories. Then we'll have Dan Schumacher a little while after that as we wrap things up for a Friday morning here on Up North News Radio on this 414 day. We'll be back.
Follow Up North News with our daily newsletter. Go to our website, upnorthnewswi.com, and click newsletter on the top banner. Once again, here's Pat Kreitlow.
You just call out my name.
Kristen, I hadn't heard one of my favorite albums in a long time. I came upon this yesterday. That's Carole King and James Taylor singing live at the Troubadour. Just an amazing little live concert that they put in and talk about their shared history together. We are in our hometown health segment, as we do every Thursday at 7:30. And we're taking on, in this week, a real crisis in America. We talked in our last segment about young people getting caught up in gaming, but that's just one part of a much larger issue of young people trying to find their place in this world and dealing with other issues. So, Kristen, why don't you take us deeper into that topic and introduce our guest?
Well, we keep hearing in the media and in personal conversations about this crisis in mental health in our kids. But what does this actually mean? I mean, Governor Evers has pointed it out. We're hearing it all over the place. So we brought my friend, Dr. Tracy Gayu, who is the CEO of Catalpa Health, but also a licensed psychologist and a board-certified behavior analyst, to help us talk about some of the broader issues and really just bring this to the forefront. Tracy, welcome.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. I really appreciate it. I think this is a topical issue for certainly for every parent out there today. So thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you have an extensive background in behavioral health with a focus on children and adolescents. Can you tell us a little bit about the people you serve and the challenges that they're facing these days?
Certainly. So we provide services for children and actually some young adults who are waiting for a transition into adult psychiatric care or behavioral health care. And we provide a variety of services. So we provide individual therapy and group therapy, which I think is particularly valuable for children these days. Mm-hmm. And then in addition to that, we provide the individual therapy in school-based settings. Well, my office is about to turn off. And there I am.
Don't you hate when that happens? You get those things are great for saving energy, but if you sit still long enough, next thing you know, you're sitting in the dark waving your arm to try to get the sensor going. It's the literal definition of first world problems, but
it really is. And I sit long enough in meetings every day that it happens frequently. So I think, some of the issues we serve, we also provide intensive outpatient therapy for children who were trying to help either prevent an inpatient hospitalization program or to help them come down from an inpatient hospitalization setting where they need more assistance than just going back into a more traditional outpatient program. There are a number of programs we have. We provide outreach services for babies, for infants, called our Seedlings program. We work with daycares and preschool providers to help them identify children who might need a referral for an assessment or an evaluation, and on how to manage some of those early behavioral challenges, because we know that if a child experiences some behavioral challenges when they enter elementary school, they tend to be tracked into low ability tracks within their educational mm-hmm. career, and that impacts them for a lifetime. So we have a number of programs we offer for children, and very proud to be a participant in this field providing care.
And you've been doing this for a long time. I won't say how long, but it's been a long time. So you've seen a lot in your illustrious career. How has this changed over time, especially in recent times with all of the insults with COVID and the at-home schooling and all of the things that kids have been seeing recently? How has it changed over time?
Yeah, that's a great question. Well, and I think that on a positive note, the acceptance of mental health as an issue and less of a stigmatized issue has been tremendously helpful. And I think that that's responsible for some of the increase we're seeing in referrals for care, which is a wonderful thing. The other piece of it, though, and you mentioned COVID, are the part of the challenges, right? So 1 in 5 children will experience a mental health challenge, and that's concerning. But when we compare, say, 2019 to 2020, if you look at the period between April and October of those 2 years, we saw pediatric emergency department visits increase by 24% for children between the ages of 5 and 11, and by 31% for children between the ages of 12 and 17. So it's that period of time certainly impacted kids. And I will say, to give you sort of a more, if we pull the lens back a little further, the Wisconsin Office of Children Mental Health just released a report where they talk about the incidence of anxiety, suicidal ideation or attempts, and depression have increased over the last 10 years to 34%. And we've got children reporting feeling sad or hopeless every day at 34%. And that's an increase of 10 percentage points over the last 10 years. So it's a big problem. It is a crisis. And anecdotally, I will say that many of the people I work with, either within our organization or in like organizations, feel that this sort of rising tide of need that we struggle to serve hasn't even crested yet. So we're mm-hmm. still seeing the surge build.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah. And, you know, you mentioned 1 in 5 kids will experience a mental health crisis. And it's increased by almost a third in the last few years. I mean, this is really a crisis. And Governor Evers, in fact, called the state of mental health a, quote, burgeoning crisis. And he's declared 2023 the year of mental health. In his budget, he included $500 million to expand access to mental and behavioral health, including veteran and school-based mental health services, suicide and crisis lifeline support, efforts to bolster mental and behavioral health workforce, and other things. That's all political policy talk. How does that filter down to help you and affect the people that you serve?
Well, one of the things he's talked about in his plan, and I don't know the full details, is emphasizing behavioral health services being provided in the school setting. And I think that that affords us some wonderful benefits and also some challenges. So some of the benefits, I think, are that it does reduce the barriers both for children and for their parents. When you think about taking your child to a behavioral health or a counseling appointment, you've got to leave work, pick them up, pull them out of school, drive them to the appointment, and then drive them back to school and then work. So it affects both the parent's ability to work, and then it also affects the child's time away from school. So we provide services. At one time, we were providing services in over 50 schools. We now provide services in about 40 schools. And I think that that really helps maybe some of our more vulnerable children who have barriers to accessing care, such as transportation or their parents' work, the need for their parents to work, or the lack of flexibility they have in missing some work. But so that's a wonderful opportunity. and a wonderful thing we need to be thinking about more.
It's something that very few politicians until quite recently wanted to talk about at all. It still had that stigma to it. And if you need evidence for how things have changed in terms of the stigma, look at how Pennsylvania Senator John Fetterman was able to check himself in for treatment for depression and say so and not have to hide. And we need that to continue, especially when it comes to our kids. Now critics are mostly on the fiscal side, I think, and they look and say, well, gee, $500 million, you know, Assembly Speaker Robin Voss's first reply to that was ain't going to happen. And I think that he is not aware that, you know, there's a University of Wisconsin study that said there are 440 people for each mental health provider in Wisconsin. You know, and mm-hmm. that at least 55 counties have a significant shortage of psychiatrists. And so, you know, the resources can include money, can include programs, but really you need people. You need people who can provide the listening and provide the direction. And I wonder if that is that challenging enough in Wisconsin without adding the political climate?
Well, it's interesting because we also offer psychiatry services here. And I will tell you that we're a nonprofit and we're supported by healthcare systems. So they cover our losses. And psychiatry is a huge loss leader for us. 60% of our psychiatric patients are on Medicaid. And 50% of our entire patient population is on Medicaid. And those parents, and back to the school-based therapy issue, those parents often don't have the ability with their work life to schedule behavioral health appointments as they are typically scheduled. So my daughter sees a counselor and her appointments are scheduled. She can have 3 appointments scheduled. One is at the end of April, one is June, and it's like, it's a very complex, difficult to access system. And you may not have a job where you can make an appointment in June. You may not receive your work schedule for another 2 weeks. Like it's the flexibility. So the school-based mental health services, I think, are gonna be helpful for those situations. Politics aside, there's nothing worse than a parent trying to work while worrying about their child's mental health. And it's an issue, I think, that crosses the aisle. We certainly are all worried about where we're going to pay for this program or that program or where we want to put our money. But I don't want to lose an entire generation of kids. Right. I think we have the potential to have the healthiest generation of kids we've ever had as we move toward increased acceptance of mental health problems and seeking treatment for them. But yeah, it's a concerning issue.
I think that's an incredibly important point, that it is so much more acceptable to recognize that you have a mental health issue and that you are seeking treatment for it. But, you know, as you pointed out, we don't have enough resources. So it's a matter of increasing access and making it truly accessible for people. So in the last few minutes that we have, what do you want the people of Wisconsin to know about mental health in our kids? And how, if they are feeling inspired by our conversation today, what can they do to pitch in or to elevate this issue in their own communities?
Oh, gosh. I think that I would suggest that parents who have children who are of the age that they talk to you about things, I would talk about things like, do you feel worried? Do you feel nervous walking into situations? And talking with someone about some general coping skills. Some of those are available on the internet and really helpful, but establishing some open communication when your children are younger and willing to talk to you before they turn into teenagers who are separating from you and less likely to talk, I think that's really helpful. If you notice signs or changes in your child that are concerning in terms of school attendance or avoidance or feeling sick and with vague symptoms, then I would reach out and try to access some help.
Good. I mean, again, conversation. So much of it comes back to that, and not just leaving people in front of a screen, because screens can be helpful, but screens sometimes are just the absolute worst. Dr. Tracy Gayu, thank you so much.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you.
Yeah, we really appreciate hearing from you. Kristen, you've done it again. You have cool friends.
I do have really cool friends who are making a giant difference here, right on the street, like here in Wisconsin.
Unlike, you know, nobody's like Luke Mathers and me. And Luke will join us again in just a moment. You're up north.
You've got a friend.
You know, most of you catch us on Civic Media radio stations, which is great. It's only those of you watching live on Facebook through the video. See our faces light up every Wednesday when Melissa Kay joins us from locally grown radio. Just that tone of voice, that pleasant greeting. It's we need more. Aaron and I need more of that. So we appreciate that on a weekly basis. Aaron just can't listen to me all the time. So thank you for being here in the middle of our week.
I'm glad to be here with you both everybody else.
How's the river looking out there? We were talking earlier about the flooding with the snow melt.
Yeah, it's the water's high. It's going fast. It's cool to see, but also it's a little, you know, feels a little dangerous.
Oh, without a doubt. And there's still a lot of snow up there.
Yes. Further north, there definitely is.
We saw some pictures because I haven't been north of Chippewa Falls for a while here, but a friend with a cabin in Hayward, somebody else up north was talking about, you know, in some places the snow is still waist to chest deep. Mm-hmm. Or at least it was last weekend, I should say. You know, obviously it's melted since then.
It's melted since, but even here in Abbotsford, we have 2-3 feet of snow in some places still.
Mm-hmm. You're in Abbotsford?
Yep.
I thought you were in Rapids.
Well, I'm only an hour from Rapids, and okay, I'm there once a week.
Okay. All right. So anyway, everybody stay safe there. And yes. I suppose we should let people know we started with Philadelphia Freedom because that was the number one song this day in 1975 by Elton John. Let's see. Other number ones included The Fifth Dimension's Aquarius Let the Sunshine In this day in 1969. And on this day in 1973, on Sesame Street, Stevie Wonder played Superstition and a 7-minute version of it. I went back and looked at the video, and basically he plays Superstition, which is about 3 minutes 45 seconds, and then, you know, on the record it just kind of fades out. Mm-hmm. He just keeps going. He just keeps chatting. You can see all the bandmates are kind of looking at him like, you know, let's wrap this up. And of course, they, you know, he can't see them giving the sign to wrap it up over here. He just keeps going and going and jamming for 7 minutes, and the kids are dancing, which is fine. But yeah, I don't know that you see a lot of that on Sesame Street. On this day in 1983, REM released their debut album Murmur, which included Radio Free Europe.
Nice.
Also on this day in 1955, the polio vaccine developed by Dr. Jonas Salk is declared safe and effective. A young Ron Johnson immediately declares that it is filled with microchips, which is quite a conspiracy considering microchips had not yet been invented. And yet there he was saying, don't get your polio shot.
Hmm. And we can thank Henrietta Lacks for that. HELOC. Well, the HELOC cells.
Okay.
The HeLa cells is what they're called. And she's the one that unknowingly donated cells so that they could create all of these different things, vaccines.
Damn it, Aaron. There we go, learning stuff again. I mean, we bring
The Immortal Life of Henrietta Lacks is a fascinating book.
All right. Now I have more things to do this weekend. On this day in 1984, Rush released their 10th studio album, Grace Under Pressure, which included Distant Early Warning. I never really warmed up to Rush, and I'm pretty sure it cost me my first girlfriend in high school. She was a big Rush fan, and I was much more Barry Manilow and, you know, the Carpenters. And I think she very wisely cut me loose at that point.
The band I was in, the drummer was very, very much a Rush fan.
If you're a drummer, you have to be. It's the law.
Yeah.
Yes. Again, I take nothing away from their skill set. It's just, you know, what I want to listen to over and over again. Actor Ed O'Neill is 77 today. You know him from either Modern Family and or Married with Children. David Letterman is 76.
Wow.
What happened to that boyish young comedian?
That's hard to believe.
Who is new on the scene. Yeah. Well, it's kind of like Tiger Woods. I mean, did you see him over the weekend?
Mm-mm.
Just limping off the course and pulling out because of injury. And it's like, where's that young Stanford University golfer who was new on the scene? Time is
years
a bear.
Have passed. Yep.
Time is a bear. Singer Vince Gill is 66 today. We played a little Garth earlier because on this day in 1989, he released his debut album, self-titled Garth Brooks. It included Much Too Young to Feel This Damn Old, as well as The Dance and If Tomorrow Never Comes.
If tomorrow never comes, will she know how much I loved her?
I'll tell you
what. The voice of my childhood.
Yeah, and even if that's your debut album, and if you're one of those that has a sophomore jinx, and if he were to have nothing else, people would still be talking about that album.
You know?
I mean, there's plenty. There's Hootie and the Blowfish. There's Alanis Morissette. There's a whole list of people who only had one great album. They never could come up with another, but you still remember them and you play those songs. And if Garth had stopped there, thankfully he didn't stop there. On this day in 1988, Sonny Bono was elected mayor of Palm Springs, California. People laughed, but he held that position till 1992. He ran for Congress and got elected in 1994, reelected in 1996. Would have been elected in 1998 had he not died in a skiing accident. His widow Mary filled out his term and then served another 14 years in Congress beyond that. And it all started with Sonny's frustration with opening a restaurant in Palm Springs, and he channeled that into a run for mayor.
Wow.
You just never know. Again, the local thing that gets you started could project you into all kinds of things depending on, you know, what motivates you.
Yeah.
And in Sonny's case, it was going from Sonny and Cher to becoming mayor and then a member of Congress. Billy Joel's Greatest Hits Volume 1 and 2 was certified double diamond this day in 1999 for selling over 20 million copies. It was only the fourth album to receive that certification after Thriller, The Wall, and Eagles, Their Greatest Hits, 1971 to 1975. And we have to end with 1999. And the Backstreet Boys, again, more sounds from your childhood, perhaps?
Not really. I never was into the Backstreet Boys.
Well, yes, you'll know this one.
Tell me why ain't nothing but a
yeah, you can't help it.
Tell me why ain't nothing but a mistake.
I mean, yeah, it's there. You're always going to know what it is. And then finally, 2013 Fall Out Boy issued their comeback album, Save Rock and Roll, featuring the hit single My Songs, Know What You Did in the Dark, Light 'Em Up. You know, again, Fall Out Boy, I'm kind of plus minus on there. But again, I'm raising my daughters in an era of Backstreet Boys and NSYNC and Spice Girls. And so, you know, I still can't hear any early Spice Girls without thinking of the little 6-year-old and the little 4-year-old dancing around. Of course, now they're, 33 and 31?
They're still dancing around.
Yeah, I was going to say, but they'll still sometimes dance if we play it at just the right time. Hey, Melissa, have a great day up there. Tell everybody to stay safe. Stay away from the rivers.
I will.
Catch her on locally grown radio, WFHR. You guys still starting at 7 o'clock here?
Yes, we do.
All right.
Kick off at 7.
All right. Well, you have a great day there. Thanks again. We'll talk to you next Wednesday.
All right. Thanks, guys. Have a good day.
Yeah, you too. All right. So for everybody except those of you at WFHR, locally grown radio, we come back in our next hour with State Representative Francesca Hong. We'll be talking about how to develop small businesses and develop the workforce in the state of Wisconsin the right way, right after this. You're up north.